All right, so we'll take a moment to gather ourselves, let our minds settle, let our bodies settle, let our minds settle into our body. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken through all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken through all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken through all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. Prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, urging, supplicating, whatever virtue I've collected, I dedicate it to awakening. The ground perfumed and strewn with flowers, Meru for continents, sun and moon, this imagined Buddha field offering, may all beings dwell in the pure realms according to the different propensities of beings. Please turn the wheel of Dharma, great, lesser, and uncommon. Dadan sam shantam chelo chesu drawer zinji love to soul chelam to drawer zinji love to soul am chopa sewer zinji love to soul chopa yeshisu chawar zinji love to soul. I pray for blessing. May my mind and the minds of all sentient beings turn toward the Dharma. I pray for blessing. May the Dharma become the path. I pray for blessing. May the path clarify confusion. I pray for blessing. May confusion arise as wisdom. Lai ke dang lu dang nu jin ke chu bum da da mi ke nam dang dra wa kun ji dra ke ji sam pa ar tam che ke ji la ki chu ten to. In the tongues of Nagas, Yakshas, gods, those of demons and of humans too, in the many languages there are, may I teach the Dharma in them all. Let us begin by giving rise to the thought that in order to benefit all sentient beings whose numbers fill the extent of space, I must attain the level of perfect enlightenment. In order to bring this about, I will practice the profound Mahayana Dharma by way of study, contemplation, and meditation. So at KDC, they've already done their meditation part, and we're going to do some study and contemplation now to fulfill that intention. So does anybody have anything to say before we launch right into it? Okay, I did not look over my notes from what we talked about last time. We're going to do a quick review from actually Luminous Mind by Kala Rinpoche because he has very short summaries, and we only did one. We actually only did one link last week, the ignorance link, which is a very important link. And as we discussed, as Trungpa Rinpoche explained to us in some detail, it is a very important point of intervention in the cycle of samsara. If we can counteract our ignorance, our lack of awareness of how things really exist, which is, for example, in a non-dual manner, it's not I versus other, but all one being in some sense, we can intervene through beginning with shamatha, shine meditation, calm abiding, and progressing to vipassana, laktong, insight meditation, coming to know the nature of our own mind and our own experience, its true nature. That's where we can have an impact on the link of ignorance, which is the beginning of the whole ball of wax. And I wanted to reiterate, I don't think there's anybody new with us today, but I can't see who's sitting behind Mike though. Okay, unmute. Is that?
It's John.
Oh, it's John. Yes, I see now. It's John. Hi, John. Were you here last week, John?
No, I apologize. I missed last.
Okay. You were here the week before. Okay. All right. So then we have one person. Well, but I've said this all 3 weeks, so I'm just going to say it again. I'm not considering myself teaching this topic of the 12 links. I don't feel that I understand it thoroughly enough to really teach it. So we're exploring it together. That's what we're doing. So please approach it in that spirit. Like, you're not just listening to me, or mostly you're listening to Trungpa Rinpoche and Kala Rinpoche, but you're not just listening, but the work to do is to study and contemplate it, each of us on our own as well, and reinforce it. And the more that you study, I'm really finding that through this process, that the more I study it, the more I go over it again and again, the more it seems to make sense to me. But I still don't have the whole thing, and we'll encounter some of that today. So I wanted to share actually a quotation that came in from Eric Swanson today. I don't know if everybody's on his KDK, Kagyu Zamlin Khunshab, daily turning list. He sends a Dharma quote, not every day. Sometimes he's out of the country, but he sends a Dharma quote most days. And the one today was particularly pertinent to our study. And it's from a lovely teacher, Zhamgong Kongchul III, the youngest, the newest, well, not the newest, now there's a newer one. But the one who we heard, some of us heard teach at KTC back in the 90s before his untimely death in, I think, 1993. So this quote is from a teaching that he gave in Montreal in 1985. And it really describes this whole process, the whole wheel of life, circle of interdependence, circle of samsara, cycle. So what he says is, and I can send this to you in writing, I'll just forward it. When someone strongly clings to a self, he or she automatically assumes any apprehended objects are other than the apprehending self. So right in the heart of ignorance here, this is ignorance, is when we apprehend, meaning we perceive an object as being separate from ourself. So when someone strongly clings to a self, we automatically see the world in terms of other. This is the point at which chaos begins, says Zhamgong Kongchul. And I think we could, most of us at least, could relate to the idea of samsara as chaos in some way, sometimes perhaps more than others. So this is the point at which chaos begins. Right off the bat, this is link one. We perceive the world in the wrong way. So this is the point at which chaos begins. Physical and verbal disruptive afflictions, that's what we call the mental afflictions, arise from attachment for or aversion against apprehended objects, the things that we incorrectly perceive as being out there and separate from us. Because we see them as separate from us, we automatically develop, and we're going to see that exact process today in the first few links, we automatically either like them or we don't like them. Physical and verbal disruptive afflictions arise from attachment for or aversion against apprehended objects. All physical and verbal activities are determined by the mental habit of experiencing attachment and aversion, which comes directly and automatically out of that basic ignorance, the first link. Then he says, karma, the infallible law of cause and effect, is created. Individuals are continuously involved in activities and create karma through this liking or disliking that comes out of misperceiving. So then we create karma. As a result, samsara ensues. I mean, that's basically the whole 12 links right there. In the process, the habitual tendencies intensify, and one continues spinning around in samsara, the never-ending circle of suffering. So this is actually, we're going to get into this a bit today with regard to the second link. And Marilyn asked a question last week. I think it was Marilyn. It might have been Patrick. You guys can fight it out. About link two is about the past. It's about our karma from, it was Marilyn. Karma from past lives ripening. So what we're going to see today in this further discussion is that through, you know, through this karma, this karma from our previous life is brought into this life and makes us go around in the same grooves. And each time we go around in the same groove, we strengthen it. We make it stronger. As Jamgon Kongchul put it, in the process, the habitual tendencies intensify. Our habitual tendencies get stronger because we engage in the same patterns again and again. And that's how the cycle of samsara becomes the never-ending circle of suffering. So anyway, I just thought that was a really pertinent quote, and I will forward that to everybody. So I also have another quote to bring. I don't want to take up too much of our time. Maybe I'll just send that one to everybody. So we are in Trungpa Rinpoche. Oh, but first we're going to look at Luminous Mind for one moment. Just see what Kala Rinpoche had to say about the first link, which we discussed actually in great detail last week, Trungpa Rinpoche, and we didn't even cover the whole chapter. Trungpa Rinpoche went into a lot of detail about ignorance, and please feel very free to reread that anytime and like refamiliarize, really deeply familiarize yourself with the whole way that ignorance works as the beginning of this whole circle, endless circle of suffering that is samsara. So in Luminous Mind, in the chapter, The 12 Links of Dependent Origination, you don't have to have the book, but if you do, we are going to refer to it a few times today. We're on page 71, right. In the outer links of the... So he's talking, and actually a lot of the discussion in Trungpa Rinpoche as well, we're talking about the macro, you know, the macro cycle of birth and death. How we go, like the steps, the specific steps by which we go from one life through death, through all the bardos to the next life. So a lot of the terminology is going to be there. It's going to be, it reminds me, and I haven't totally worked out everything by any means, but it reminds me a lot of the way that we talk about, traditionally we talk about the six realms as like, places, as places you're born into, and it's presented that way. I don't doubt that that could be true, but we also, especially through Trungpa Rinpoche's work, which has been carried on by Pema Chodron, relate to it as psychological states that we could get stuck in within this human realm, within this lifetime. So I think as we go through, we're going to mostly be talking about the 12 links as links of how we go from one life to the next life through all the steps. But we can also see it as how we go from a moment of perception or experience to the next moment of perception or experience. We go through that whole cycle on a microcosmic sort of a scale. But don't feel like you have to do the mental gymnastics of keeping all that going. I think just by going over it again and again, we start to see, or from different perspectives, or from one week to the next, we start to see it a little more clearly. So on page 71 of Luminous Mind, for an ordinary person, death, that's where we fall into ignorance, the ignorance of one life to the next. For an ordinary person, death is followed by a period of unconsciousness or ignorance in the bardo of emptiness. This ignorance is the point of departure in the cycle of illusion or confusion, the first mental obscuration that gives rise to all the others. In the outer links of the wheel of life, the first link, ignorance, is symbolized by a blind person groping for the way with a cane. That ignorance also appears in symbolic form at the center or hub around which the wheel of samsara continually turns. So if you have your, you know, it's all coming back down to the diagram. You know, he's talking now about that central piece where we have ignorance and aversion and desire. On the basis of ignorance, under the influence of latent formative elements in the fundamental consciousness, the experience of individual consciousness is reactivated. So on that macrocosmic scale, when we die, we fall into, if we have not attained realization, we fall into a period of unconsciousness, blankness, like literal unawareness, which is what ignorance means, marigpa, unawareness, lack of awareness. Then The in link to the experience of individual consciousness is reactivated. We wake up again. These elements are karmic imprints, the latent formative elements. These are the things we bring to from our previous life. These elements are karmic imprints remaining in the fundamental consciousness after death. Because remember, our body dies, our mind does not. Our mind goes into unconsciousness after we die, but it's not gone. And so this is the re-waking up. And these karmic elements, these habitual patterns, have remained in the mind stream, even though the body is gone. So these elements are karmic imprints remaining in the fundamental consciousness after death and the disappearance of individual consciousness. On to page 72. At the moment of death, the action of karma temporarily disappears. Then it returns. So we're getting into now link two, which we will now, we'll read it first from Kala Rinpoche, and then we will read the longer explanation from Trungpa Rinpoche. At the moment of death, the action of karma temporarily disappears into ignorance. Then it returns as, he calls it formative factors here, or his translator calls it formative factors here. We call it karmic impulse, I think, which is the second link. Reconditioning the mind in the individual consciousness along with mind's productions, all of mind's activity. These factors exist in the form of propensities and habits. So that's the form that the previous imprints take in coming to the next life. The karma or formative factors that cause the reappearance of the I am delusion or sense of individual consciousness that's separate from what we perceive as other are the point of departure here, but they continue their activity throughout the cycle. So the habitual patterns are always influenced. They influence every step of this cycle, but this is where they first come into play. The rebirth of the individual consciousness is symbolized by a potter molding clay and corresponds to the end of the bardo of emptiness. What do we call the bardo of suchness, I think, dharmata. Yeah, the bardo of suchness, dharmata. He's calling it the bardo of emptiness here, meaning empty of content, I guess. The moment at which the consciousness reestablishes itself before beginning its migration into the bardo of becoming. So I wanted to mention briefly here, I have like a printout from the Tuesday night class years ago when we did Path to Buddhahood. Of this is actually just an enlargement of the picture that's in Luminous Mind in this chapter of the cycle. And I'm only holding it up because it shows, and I'm sure you can't see it, but it shows the bardo of emptiness as the first, like, as the ignorance link. I think that's what it is, bardo of emptiness. And then it's bardo of becoming all the way around up until link 11, I think it is. Yeah, 11, actual birth. So we're talking here about, this is all the stuff that happens after you die. You die and then you go into ignorance. And then links 2 through 10 are all before we're actually born into a body. This is like the consciousness taking form and the body taking form, like after conception. So this stuff all happens before we're even born. And I'm thinking about this now because my granddaughter was just born on Friday. Okay, and then we go into the bardo from birth to death, which only gets two little links, but that's what we're in now. And we're experiencing it as a lot of activity going on. And of course, you have the microcosmic aspect of it that we're going through this process, like continuously recreating samsara continuously from one moment of experience to the next through the same process. So I think that's all he had to say. Yes, okay. So I'm going to actually read what he says on the third. It's very short. On the third and fourth links, because they're all one thing. Sort of they're how we are from ignorance coming into being to have sort of be fully formed in this life, even though we're not born yet. The skandhas become fully formed in these four steps. These ignorance to karmic impulse to consciousness is the third one to name and form. So we have karmic impulse where previous life habitual patterns start to reawaken and come into play. And then that leads to the third link, which he calls here the individual consciousness. We're becoming who we are in this new lifetime. our personality, we could call it personality. That's not like, that's like a small word for what it is, but who we are in this life is starting to form out of our previous habitual patterns. So the individual consciousness is the third link, symbolized by the agitated monkey. We don't have pictures on our diagram, so hopefully you've looked at the like one of the depictions, but it does say what the picture is in each link. So symbolized by the agitated monkey, which is the cognitive mode that experiences everything in terms of subject and object. So that is actually the definition of consciousness, as opposed to awareness, like Rigpa, or awareness, consciousness, Namshe. Namshe is it's the mind that experiences things in a dualistic way. So now we have sort of in link three, that's full blown, I would say. And again, this is me, this is how I understand it, which may not be like 100% what you would hear from someone who really thoroughly has studied this and understood it. The cognitive mode that experiences everything in terms of subject and object. So that's, so you have the whole thing in link three. Which then gives, in turn, gives rise to all dualistic activity. So then in the fourth link is called name and form. And we're going to get a really interesting explanation in Trungpa Rinpoche from that, for what that really means. But here, Kala Rinpoche gives a very brief explanation. He says the fourth link is called name and form, depicted by a boat with two people, representing respectively the consciousness from the third link and the mental body in the bardo of becoming. So we'll get to that in Trungpa Rinpoche. I won't try to explain it further now, but this consciousness is now being given a, like a form. So that's name and form. Name is referring to the consciousness. Form is referring to the form that it now sees itself as having. Right, so this consciousness subject, the subject consciousness corresponds to name, while form is the body with which it is identified in the experience of I am that, as I am that body. When we look in the mirror, like that's us, right? We see that and we think that's me. So we'll stop there. I don't think we'll get as far as I thought we might today, but the seventh link would be a great place to stop, but so is this. All right, so I'm going to actually start in Trungpa Rinpoche before we actually get to the second link. I wanted to go back to chapter one, that very last bit about just a reminder of why we study the 12 links, like the practical application. So this is right at the end of chapter one. I don't know the page number. When we study this, we do so in the actual process of creation and action that generates samsara. So that's the point of view of the 12 links, is how is samsara created? How is our confusion created? How is our suffering created? But, says Trungpa Rinpoche, we also study the order in which we can take this process apart. Dismantling the process of samsara shows the way to liberation and enlightenment. This is the reason why the teachings on inner interdependence are very important. So even though the presentation is from the point of view of how it's created, we can always be looking at it from the point of view of how can we intervene in this? How can we prevent suffering from arising? And so we got to, you know, we saw that link one is a place we can intervene. We're not going to get an intervention for a while after link one. We have a long way to go before the next chance to intervene. So I'm just fast forwarding here to karmic creation. So we've already reviewed ignorance, basically. I hope everybody feels that they understand basically what ignorance means. It means misperception of how things are. So karmic creation. And now we're in Trungpa Rinpoche. The three root poisons of mind, desire, aggression, and stupidity. Stupidity, we usually say ignorance. It is like it's a little bit willful, is my understanding of it. It's like ignorance, being unaware, but instead of complete cluelessness, it's like we're just not choosing to look at something in some way. There's like that element of we could look. And then the way to look, we've learned, like the way that we have to look is to start with Shine. And proceed to Vipassana, and proceed to nature of mind, and then we have it. So we're going to call it desire, aggression, and ignorance. This is, again, this is a translator thing. This is not a word that Trungpa Rinpoche chose for English, how to convey it in English. So the three poisons of mind are rooted in ignorance and cause us to act. The strength of these passions or obscuring emotions is sometimes very strong and overwhelms our thoughts, and is sometimes very weak, having only a slight influence on the mind. So our mental poisons can be more or less operational at any given moment, or more or less strong at any given moment. The power, but so the point here is, like, they're in operation whether we're like having a temper tantrum or not, like we're still caught up in them. And sometimes they manifest really fully and we can really recognize them then, but they're always happening. So the power of these emotions, the power of these emotions determines our actions, which result in karma. For instance, sometimes we feel a very powerful sense of love and compassion towards others, and we develop good karma through that. With these feelings, we perform actions that are loving and compassionate, the result being positive or virtuous action. Sometimes, however, the obscuring emotions become very strong, and we then do unvirtuous actions such as lying, stealing, and harming others. Whether we do virtuous or unvirtuous actions determines whether we will experience pleasure or pain in the future. Unvirtuous actions lead to more samsaric suffering. So in The Torch of Certainty, Zhamgong Kongtrul tells us that, like, karma is so complicated that it cannot be understood by somebody who has not yet reached the first official bodhisattva level, you know, experienced emptiness directly. But he said the way that we can understand karma until we get to that point, it can just be boiled down to, if you do engage in actions that help others, if you engage in positive, virtuous actions, then you experience happiness in the future. And if you engage in negative actions that harm others, you experience suffering in the future. And this is actually, it's not in either one of them. There's actually, to go back to the diagram for a second, this inner circle, the three emotional poisons, in the real wheel of life, there's a circle right here. Like, this next one is the six realms, but there's a circle inside the six realms, and it shows somebody going up and somebody going down. And that's what this is about. Like, positive actions make you go up. The good karma makes you go up and into happiness, and the negative actions make you go down into lower realms and more intense suffering. So we're going to skip the next paragraph, except for the first sentence. Karma literally means action, and there are three kinds of karma or actions: positive, negative, and neutral. Positive karma is the result of actions that lead to pleasant results. Negative karma, the result of actions that lead to unpleasant results. So we're going to go to the next paragraph now. Because the mind is ignorant, it has the obscuring emotions of passion or desire, anger or aggression, and stupidity or ignorance. These actions have later consequences and create what is called bringing together circumstances. I would maybe translate that a little differently, like gathering conditions is what I would probably call that. Does he explain that further? Yeah, well, he also calls it karmic creation. So you have the karmic cause and you have the emotional poison that comes into play, and then you perform actions, and your action causes condition, creates the cause for suffering. Say you did something negative, you lied, and it created a cause for suffering in the future, and then that cause gathers conditions. It attracts the conditions to it for that karma to manifest. This is how I understand it. The resulting effect of our actions is the second link of interdependent origination. For example, if one has harmed another being by killing, in the future one's own life force will be damaged. One might be killed or one might become very sick. As a result of our actions, we experience something. So in the second link of interdependent origination, the karmic impulse link, that's where the result is starting to happen. You know, you killed somebody in your previous life. Well, in this life, that habitual pattern is coming into play as In this case, you're experiencing the karmic result of it. You tend to be sickly, or you tend to be violent, or your life force is damaged. Doesn't mean if you're a sickly person that you can necessarily trace back what you did before. We just work with our situation, but it is really helpful. The practical, you know, application of this is, it's really helpful when you do have suffering to think there's a karmic cause for this. Like, it's not random. It's not like, why me? It's like, okay, somewhere along the way I planted the seed for this to happen. And then you don't have to blame anybody else. You don't have to get angry and blame someone. It's just like, this has to play out now because somewhere the cause was created for this. And that cause gathered the conditions that resulted in what I'm suffering now. Yes, Patrick.
Can you feel like an illness, if you understand what the cause is, that are you using up the negative karma?
Yeah. You can create more negative karma if you lash out and blame and develop more negative emotions and more negative actions out of your suffering. But yes, it's said that if we as the suffering plays out, it eats up, it uses up the karmic cause. And actually, in Words of My Perfect Teacher, Padre Rinpoche says something that I've always found very inspiring and motivating, which it's in his chapter on the Paramita of Patience. He said that not, like, responding with patience, like when somebody, he says this in different words, when somebody pushes your button, when somebody does something that makes you angry, if you respond to that with patience, it destroys or it purifies eons of negative karma. So by the thing happening to you, as long as you're not, you're not propagating it through having a strong reaction and acting on that reaction, then yes, it uses up the karma and even eons for a moment of being patient can use up eons of negative karma. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Okay, good. Anybody else? Hi, Dave. Okay. All right, so we'll go on. So now, the second aspect of karma. So the first reason that you don't want to do something negative is that you will experience a result from that, which is suffering. The second aspect of karma, and the second reason that we would prefer to refrain from harmful or negative actions, the second aspect of karma is called cause for developing a tendency, in which an action has a conditioning effect, making the action easier to do the next time. For example, if we perform an unvirtuous action, such as killing someone, not only do we receive the negative karma from this action, but we also build up the habit for harming life, making it easier to kill again. Whatever action we do, whether positive or negative, we develop a habit and become used to it, making it easier to do in the future. So that's really, I find that particularly inspiring. You know, if I'm not motivated by the fact that it might bring me suffering in some future lifetime, I'm just grinding myself deeper and deeper into that habitual groove. And actually, that's a thing that Pema Chidren addressed in some teaching or other that I heard years ago that I also has stuck with me and I found really helpful and inspiring, is that when you find yourself about to engage in a negative action, and we could go back to the ice cream. You're about to eat the pint of ice cream because you're stressed or whatever. Ice cream is your refuge in this moment. And you're about to do it, you could ask, is this what I want to reinforce? Like, is this a pattern I want to make stronger? Like eating a pint of ice cream every time I feel upset. It could go for losing your temper, like yelling at somebody, making somebody feel bad for something, blaming them. You could catch yourself in that moment and say, is this what I want to reinforce? That when irritation comes up, when anger comes up, I act on it verbally or physically. And if you have the presence of mind to ask that question, you can possibly stop it. And then you're wiping away some karma because instead you're being patient instead of losing your temper. So you're actually, you're improving your karmic situation. instead of making it worse, which is what you'd do if you engaged in it. So Trungpa Rinpoche says, therefore, actions possess a cause that will produce two types of results: your future experience of either suffering or happiness, and the conditioning or habit that will sink you deeper into the quicksand of samsara. So he says, this is the second karmic link, which is created through our actions. So anybody have any questions or comments on link two? And I just want to say, as I think I've implied a few times, we don't have to feel like we're going to come out with a full understanding from going through this. We will come out with more understanding, I think, than we had, thanks to Trungpa Rinpoche and Kala Rinpoche. But if it still seems a little murky, don't worry about it. I mean, we're going to cycle through these and talk about these again and again. So anybody have any questions or comments on link two? John and then Joanne.
Yeah, I was wondering how, if you're not born yet, that you can still have an idea of self and other without before you're born.
Yeah.
Like, you can't look in the mirror until you know your eyes are working.
Right. Well, is looking in the mirror the only time that you feel like you have a self?
No, I mean,
that was one
example.
Yeah, that was like a coarse example. Like, we look in the mirror and we see, and we think our body is ourself, but we're always thinking, you know, this emotion is myself, you know, I'm angry, I'm sick, or, you know, whatever it is. So no, this is all of this, as I mentioned, is taking place before we actually are born, but we also have a body before we're born. We have a body a long time before we're born, and that's name and form. I think the body is starting to come into play, but you're still in the bardo of becoming. So I think we can't sort all that out. I cannot sort all that out. So yes, but Lama Jinzang perhaps has something to add. Go ahead.
What my understanding, and John, I'm not sure if this is what you're questioning about, but even though they're describing karma at this point, this is really not yet any kind of formation of, this is before link three, which is when you're actually having the consciousness, when it calls individual consciousness arising, where there's actually the overlay of self. So this first, even though it's talking and using the term karma, it's really not even yet. It's just where, like, mind and the mental processes are just beginning to stir. And it's not until the next one where you're even beginning to have a sense of, you know, dualism, self and other. There aren't thoughts at this point yet. It's just sort of stirring, and that's my understanding. I don't know if that speaks to what you're saying. So that's where I get confused, because this idea of karma comes up as if you're actually someone to experience anything, but it's really just the mind waking up from, you know, this ignorance, from blackness, from like going into like unconsciousness, it's like coma, whatever you call it. Then it's starting to stir, and then it's not until the next link where this overlay of a sense of self even begins to arise. That's my understanding. Does that speak to anything, or did I confuse it further?
No, that sounds good. Well, it sounds good to me, because that makes sense now with what you said about shaping the, what is it called, vessel, you know, molding it, you know, that's where it's, you know, the becoming again. So it's part of it, but it's not yet formed.
Yeah. Right. It's a very subtle process. Thank you so much, Lama Jinzang. It's a very subtle process. I'm going to first call on Joanne, who had her hand up, and then we'll get to you, Dave. Okay, Joanne?
Yes, I have to compliment you on how you conveyed the interventions in a very proactive, very practical approach when you see you're in the midst of some, I'd say, negative karma that you can control at that point. And at the same time, I'm going also back to 37 practices, number 20, when I have to conquer my own aggression. I committed that memory, if I can control. But at the same time, I'm interacting with other people that are generating their karma, and how do I control them? I'm hoping that my self-control have a positive effect effect upon them.
Yeah, we can hope, but we really can only control our own end of it. And that's what this is all about, like how we control our own end of it so that we don't harm other people and don't get sucked into their like patterns of harm either.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay, thank you, Joanne. And Dave.
I was wondering, sorry I missed the first half. I was wondering if you guys discussed the possibility of just like with the interpretation of the realms as being, you know, psychodynamics of this lifetime, you know, you're in different psychological states or archetypes. Can you look at the 12 links as also occurring on a time scale, like within this life, when you think of like, you know, like every moment or even going to sleep can be a bardo or so it's, in other words, like the conditioning thing. I mean, you see the conditioning, karmic conditioning happening, you know, all the time. Within a month, you can start to change your conditioning. And similarly how, you know, like with new stuff with neuroplasticity, you can start to wire your brain different doing meditation, right? I mean, Mingyur Rinpoche and all the other monks. So I was wondering if there's anybody has ever discussed that about the 12 links not being lifetime to lifetime.
Yeah. Well, we did touch on that at the beginning, just very, very briefly. We didn't get into it. And I think this is all about neuroplasticity. You know, I mean, right now in this lifetime, we're in a physical situation with a brain. And so you're talking about brain actually changing. Jintok, did you have something to say? Oh, let me unmute you. Sorry. There you go.
We brought this up last time too. And as you said, there's going to be a chapter following this, I think chapter 4 or something or 5 right. or has the right. practical level. But in fact, that is the point that this is in fact what's going on in every moment of experience, these 12 links.
Yeah. But they don't really talk about it explicitly in that I haven't seen anything yet where that's really more than hinted at.
It's very complicated, which is why I said last week this idea about when you go to sleep or when you wake up, sort of that idea of losing consciousness and entering into the dream state and what you but apparently every moment, you know, because you're basically, even though it says there's a continuum, it's not a continuum of moments as if linearly there's something that exists unchanging, like some kind of permanent thing. It's just that in each moment of experience, that whole thing is happening because, you know, that's why in every single moment you have the chance to attain enlightenment, because at any moment you can cut through this thinking that there's a self. And it's like nanoseconds. Like if you just study the levels of consciousness when they, in the Buddhist tradition of the 8 different states, that first of all, they say like, none of the actual sensory perceptions or consciousnesses are even conceptual. And then overlaid onto whatever sensory perception or consciousness you have, then comes the mental consciousness. And even before that, which, you know, is relating to an idea basically, is then there's the overlay of the sense of there being an I who's experiencing it. So it's so happening so quickly, but it's actually happening in each moment.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Lama Jinzong. Thank you, Dave. Was there anybody else? Okay. So that's it for the second link for right now. But we can think of second through the fourth links, or even through the almost to the, like through the seventh link. This is where nothing's actually happening yet. So we're not creating any karma here. We're still. The karma from our previous life is taking form, starting with link 2, and it's just expanding, like it's taking more and more solid form, we could say, through link 7. And then with link 8, which is grasping, that's where we can get into trouble, and that's where we can intervene. So this is all at some very subtle sort of latent level right now. We're still forming this life or still forming this moment of perception. So I think we can look at link 3. Consciousness is a relatively short explanation. So the third link is consciousness, meaning that A, because of the first link of ignorance, B, we then perform an action, which is the second link, and then C, this action plants a seed in our mind, or we could say imprints a condition in our mind. So this is like the maturation of the karmic impulse of link two, like our personality is starting to have a form, which is our consciousness. Let's see. Okay, he goes into some technical things in this one, and I think I'm going to skip over a lot of it in this particular one. But please read the whole thing, and if you have any questions on it, you can bring those in. So I'm going to skip ahead a little bit to where he says, our conditioned consciousness is thus the third link in the chain of interdependent origination, with conditioned referring to the imprinted links. We're imprinted by our karmic impulses, our habitual tendencies from the previous lifetime, and that's created what we are starting to become in this lifetime. Yes, Jinzai.
Could you just sort of give us a sense in the page, because I'm trying to follow you.
I don't have the page because I'm on my Kindle. I don't have page numbers.
So could you, I was just busy looking. Could you just repeat
it's the next paragraph? Yeah. So I went from the very first sentence in the first paragraph to the last sentence in, the same paragraph.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'm sorry. Thank you.
You know, I'll try to give you some orientation. So our conditioned consciousness is thus the third link in the chain of interdependent origination, with conditioned referring to imprinted links. They're starting to mature, these links. So we're going to skip ahead. We're skipping the next paragraph and the next paragraph and the next paragraph and the next paragraph. And at the end of the paragraph that starts one of the main contexts, the end of that paragraph, it says, as we act from day to day, we are continuously imprinted. We're coming out of this third link, and he's talking about how this third link comes to be. How do we create the karma for this third link to happen? So as we act from day to day now, we are continuously imprinting and conditioning our stream of consciousness. How we act this year influences how we will be next year. How we act in this life influences how we will be in the next life. So what's happening in link three is that's coming to fruition, how we acted in our previous life. And so he's already brought us down a little bit from the absolute macro scale of lifetime to lifetime, because he said how we act this year influences how we will be next year. So he's already brought it out of the, you know, the Bardo paradigm and into like how our action of one moment influences our reality of the next moment. He says year to year, but it's also, as Lama Jinzong said, moment to moment. So then beginning of the next paragraph, the actions of our body, speech, and mind make imprints, but the imprints themselves are all in the mind, in the stream of consciousness. And then skipping a couple of sentences, the physical karma that we engage in makes a certain set of imprints in our ongoing consciousness. So again, the body dies, the consciousness goes on. What we do in our body stays in the consciousness. And so when our body dies, that consciousness is still going forward, so to speak, into the next lifetime, carrying all of those imprints of what we did physically, verbally, and mentally in our previous life. Each verbal action we perform, every time we yell at somebody, or every time we respond to somebody with kindness, each verbal action we perform makes imprints, and each action, every single action, there's no action that doesn't count. each verbal action we perform makes imprints, and each action conditions our stream of consciousness and eventually determines the quality of our speech in a future life. So our verbal actions in this lifetime are going to help determine our speech qualities, how we use our speech in our next life. So we can see that this ongoing stream of consciousness, which is continually being conditioned, is now becoming a cause for the fourth link, which is also a short one. So we could go ahead and read name and form, which I think that's helpful because it's kind of ends a section, like the formation of something interesting. So does anybody have anything that they need to ask at this point? Then we'll go on with name and form. The title name and form is another word for the five mental aggregates, Sanskrit word skanda, the famous five skandhas. Everybody remember what the five skandhas are? He's going to review it in the next sentence. So the name and form. So remember the first skanda. Everybody know the first skanda? You don't have to say, but just look in your brain. Google your brain and see if you remember what the first skanda is. The first skanda is form. So name, so that's one of the two parts of link four, name and form. So form is the form aggregate. Name refers to the last four aggregates, feelings, cognition, which we tend to call perception, mental events or mental formations, and consciousness. Those five things all together make up our sense of self. So there we are, John. Now we have the sense of self fully formed. We aren't doing anything yet. We are not creating any new karma yet. In the macrocosmic view, we're still in the womb. We're just barely, we haven't even really barely got a body yet. This is like the embryo stage or something. So he says, form refers to the first aggregate. What does this mean? This means that after we have died and have been reincarnated in a new life, we are conceived. And at first, we do not yet have a complete body with all the feelings and mental activities, which very much depend upon the way our body is made up. Form is literally the embryo, okay? The potential for the aggregates. All the genetic potential for the form that is to come is the conditioned potential for the various feelings, conditions, cognitions, and consciousnesses that will emerge once the body is formed. So the name part, the mental aggregates really precede and help form the form part. We're building those up in two and three, links two and three. Because consciousness is the last of the five skandhas, right? Consciousness is the full-blown like mentality that we have. And the mentality, the form comes later. Mind always comes first. The mind in Buddhist explanations enters the womb and starts to form a body. You're forming a body from those first four aggregates, but those, he's saying here, those first four aggregates, the mental skandhas, they're not, they can't express themselves yet. They have no expression yet because the body has to form. So it's an interesting point in our development here. Because the mind comes first, but then you have to have the body and the brain. You got to have the neurons to be able to then express, to really feel things and really, you know, have perceptions and have, fully formed consciousness. So they are present, like the four mental skandhas. They are present, but only nominally. And for this reason, they are called name. One cannot have the eye consciousness until there are eyes to see. And so forth. So this is fairly technical. Don't worry if you don't feel like you have a firm grasp of it, but it's starting to go in. That's the main thing. So in the time of the Buddha asked that temples display a drawing of the six realms of existence. In Tibet, this has been formalized in the Wheel of Life paintings. These paintings all have a rooster, snake, and pig in the center, as we've seen, representing the three root emotions of passion, aggression, and ignorance. Next is a circle with six divisions representing the six realms of samsara. And finally, along the outside is a circle depicting the 12 links that lead to samsara. So that is the diagram. How far do we have? Okay, we can finish this. The first link, ignorance. So he's going to review a little bit. Here he's pulling together links two, three, well, actually one, two, three, and four. He's going to pull them all together here. The first link, ignorance, is depicted by the image of a blind person. A blind person cannot see and consequently does not know which way to go. Through ignorance, one is not aware of the true nature of reality. And because of this, one wanders in samsara, not knowing which way to go. We call it wandering because we're confused and we don't know where we're going. The second link of karmic creations or karmic impulses is symbolized by a potter making a pot. At first, there was a raw lump of clay that goes on the wheel. So in link two, it's like you just got the raw clay and it's gone onto the potter's wheel and the potter's starting to conceive of what he or she is going to make, starting to make something. The potter shapes it with his or her hands and gradually it emerges into the form it will have, which is the fourth link. So through links two, so it starts in link two, gets more fully formed in link 3, and then has a form, finally has form in link 4. Similarly, through our karmic creations or karmic impulses, sometimes good and sometimes bad, we are gradually establishing the pattern of our future. Like the potter at the wheel, we are creating our own name and form. In this life, in this moment, the next moment, the next moment, this year, the next year, the next year, this life, the next life, the next life. Through our actions, we are shaping how our body, speech, and mind will be in the future. So let's keep that in mind. Let's ask ourselves, you know, when we find ourselves about to lose our temper or about to engage in anything that we know is going to create suffering for ourselves and possibly create harm to another person, ask ourselves, is this what I want to reinforce? Do I want to harm this person? Like, do I want to cause this person to suffer? Do I want to cause myself to suffer? And is this a pattern I want to reinforce so that I'm going to be doing the same thing 16 lifetimes from now? So we're going to stop there. We still have a couple of minutes. Oh, wait a minute. We didn't actually, I think there's more to this chapter, but we'll do that next time, which will actually be, there's no more teachings, Sunday teachings in November. We got the holiday coming up and I'm going to be away for a couple of weeks. We're going to pick up again the first Sunday in December, and we're going to meet the first two Sundays in December, which are December 2nd and 9th. Normally we meet the third and fourth Sundays, but because of the holiday season, we've switched them around. So we will pick up with consciousness again, and we'll review the whole thing briefly and pick up with consciousness again on December 2nd. Anybody have anything? Yes, Marilyn, I'm going to unmute you.
If I haven't said it before, I just want to say that we're delighted to have more people join our Sangha, through the power of wizardry. And you're welcome to join us anytime that we are Zooming, which is basically when Lama Chidrin is teaching.
Okay, thank you, Marilyn. So everybody feels quite welcome, I hope. You're all honorary members now of the KDC Sangha, the Washington, D.C. Sangha. All right, anybody else before we do our prayers? Okay. Okay, Fanny, I'm going to unmute you.
Congratulations on becoming a grandma, and I'm glad your daughter did okay. You're welcome. And it's truly, you know, it's great to be reinforced and see all my Dharma brothers and sisters, you know, and recognizing we have a place of liberation when we get filled with all these dualistic thinking. So thank you.
Okay, thank
and
you.
And I'm in a car.
Okay, thank you.
I'm in different places of worship today.
Okay. Well, thank you, Fanny. Okay. We're always glad.
Thank you, Fanny. We're always glad.
Okay. All right. Anybody else? Okay. Well, we have a lot to really. We're going through this slower than I envisioned, so we're just going to do it until it's done, and then we'll start the Great Path of Awakening. But I'm finding this topic really fascinating and really helpful, and I hope everybody else is too. And feedback is always welcome. Email me if you have any comments or suggestions. But we're just going to go at our own pace through this material and try to really internalize it, because we can see that, as Joanne mentioned, it has a really practical application. We can really use this. And so we can contemplate the first four links until December 2nd and contemplate how we want to form our next moment, our next year, and our next lifetime. So we'll do our prayers. The dedication. So taking a moment again to just bring our mind back into a sense of our body, grounded and settled in this present moment of awareness, letting go of all our study and contemplation, letting thoughts come and go as we focus a part of our attention while remaining in touch with vast open awareness, focus a part of our attention on dedicating any benefit from this activity to the enlightenment of ourselves and all sentient beings. This merit may it win omniscience, defeat my faults, the enemy, then from the rough and stormy sea of birth, old age, death, and disease, from this ocean of samsara, may I liberate all beings. They know things in their true existence. Kuntu Zangpo and Manjushri. To train myself in their example, I dedicate this practice fully. May every being through this practice completely gather merit and wisdom, attaining the two sacred bodies that merit and wisdom emanate. The blessings of the Buddha Kayas, the blessings of changeless Dharmata, the blessings of the steadfast Sangha, this dedication please fulfill. And just letting our minds come to rest again. And I've unmuted everybody. Kathy and Dave, do you have copies of the prayer sheet with the English?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, great. Kathy, do you need me to send you that or do you have that?
I think I have it.